Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a book reading by Bob King, creator of Astro Bob, the author of The Night Sky with the Naked Eye, a guide to the extraordinary curiosities of our universe, wonders of the night sky, you must see before you die. It's rather a nice thing. So his thing to my mum and dad, Lorraine, Bill, and for their love and encouragement. I wish I could say I had any sort of love and encouragement in my life. Okay, and we'll just read it here. We'll see how it goes through here. Someone's written Teloma 3299. Don't understand. Introduction. Life. I'm a firm believer in living it fully. When it comes to my favourite hobby, astronomy, I strive to witness as much of the cosmos as a lack of sleep will allow. Each day, the inscrutable blue dome of sky greets us with when we help step outdoors. What's up there? Only the entire universe beyond our little blue spaceship called Earth. Okay. It's interesting. Beauty runs deep overhead, deep as in billions of light years, both in space and time. Every moonrise, every heart-stopping meteor, every wish upon a star plays up there. So there's so much to see. Now, how many billion light years? It's 46 or 93 billion light years side to side and 13.8 billion light years old. Okay, what's to pick and how to see it? Allow me to lend a helping hand. Lots of us has a bucket list of things we want to do before we log off from this world for good. Float in the Dead Sea, ride a double-decker bus in London, eat truffles, or learn to ballroom dance. Wow, this is, you don't say that to a starving person thing. We want to live a life to the max, filling our buckets to the brim. Do you? This is such an American. Who is this guy? Who is this guy? Not a realistic, downtrodden person like myself. Bob King is the writer of the blog Astro Bob, author Night Sky. He is an avid sky watcher, both night and day, and a member of the American Association of Variable Star Observers. Bob writes for the Universe Today, Sky and Telescope magazine, and Duluth News Tribune, where he also is a photo editor. He lives in Duluth, Minnesota. Okay, well, he is your typical American. I've got nothing against you, it's just... Okay. Have you ever wanted to see a total eclipse of the sun? A magnificent sky-bringing aurora? Or how about Saturn's rings with your very own naked eyes? I would have to say that we're seeing the origin of... it's become so commonplace, people go, oh, of course... They get the thrill of Star Wars, and now they see a planet. They want to see something explode on it. That basically, we have been treated by cinematography in our life. This is my overall view, but there's more to it to think about. It's like for me, it's the idea of just how far things are away. You may not be able to get to the Grand Canyon, the Great Wall of China, but when it comes to the sky, you came to the right place. Have you ever wanted to see a total eclipse? Okay. In this book, we'll look at 57 must-see sights in the night sky you won't want to miss. Some will require travel, others use a telescope or binoculars, but many can be experienced with a little effort and zero expense. By choosing the entries, I carefully evaluated what I thought made up the magnificent viewing experience or provided an opportunity to get to know the essential aspects of the cosmos, like seeing asteroids or the closest star system beyond Alpha Centauri, the sun Alpha Centauri. Any list is selective, so I hope I don't pass over your favourites. Some like the Gishen and Winter Hexagon were left out because I covered them in my first book, Night Sky and the Naked Eye. Others I have revisited in this book in more detail. Bigger than anything else, a human experience, the sky and the wonders it holds invites us to deepen the sense of appreciation of the world, begins to encourage a truly cosmic perspective on life. let's let the bucket filling begin. Okay, look, my fundamental thing is that, you know, we have a second cloud layer, and the second cloud layer is very high and very, well, it's cold, it's expanded. It's, we can actually see the Big Bang 13.8 billion years of light away, you know, time, and that light stretched to 46 billion light years. But at there is a cloud layer, just much like an overcast day, where it goes to a fog, a white fog, and we can't go beyond it because time begins there. And, you know, that ability to size up the universe, you know, from the outside, so I could contract the universe. I've forgotten how many times you have to contract it. So, well, let's say, if you say a billion light years is a millimeter, and it's 96 billion light years or 93 billion light years side to side, it's 93 millimeters across. It's the size of a 93 millimeter ball. I think maybe sort of somewhere between a slightly inflated tennis ball. Now that's the universe. So I mean, going big, you can actually do something. My first one is magnificent Saturn. I have to agree. Saturn almost brings tears to my eyes. So beautiful. Don't let life slip by without seeing one of nature's most remarkable sights, the quintessential emblem of things outer space. Ignore all the rest if you must, but see Saturn. You'll be hard-pressed to find anything else like a ball surrounded by levitating rings, thousands of them nestled one within the other, composed of dusty water ice hanging, ranging from the size of grains of sand to boulders. Okay, I'd say even less. The planet averages about 800 million miles, 1.3 billion kilometres from the Earth. From the Sun? Like the average difference distance from Earth, it means it's average distance from the Sun. Okay, so 1.3 billion kilometres, if a millimetre equals a million kilometres, a 1.3 billion kilometres is 1.3 thousand million kilometres. A billion is 1,000 kilometers is a billion, so it's on the scale of the tiny universe is 1.3 meters. So, essentially, to put it into scale here, and this is me adding to it, the tiny universe. If your tiny trillion scale universe or galaxy is your sun is a millimeter, 1.3 millimeters across. The Earth is 15 centimeters away, so a handspan away. Saturn is, you know, if you're a reasonably height person, that's up to your nose, from your toe to the nose there, if you're 1.3 kilometers, a billion kilometers. That's right. It's 1,300 millimeters. 1,000 millimeters is a meter. There you go. So it's... let's go across. So we're 150 million kilometers, and this is 1,300. So it's 10 times further out. It's so great. Their gritty textures blends to a creamy smoothness. Yeah, I've got a real problem in that. It's just that we can't see them. In a pair of binoculars with magnification times 10, Saturn looks like an oval shape because the rings blend into the ball of the planet. But any small telescope magnified 30 times greater will clearly show a globe with rings, Saturn's vessels within rings. It's like a baby in mother's arms. The most common reaction to seeing Saturn for the first time is that it doesn't look real. Photos from other celestial bodies taken with large telescopes rarely resemble what you can see with your naked eye. But that's not the case of Saturn. The view, while on a small scale, uncannily resembles what a camera sees. No wonder we can't quite believe it's real. Yet, it's as real as rain. Whatever you want to say. High magnification reveals the most prominent gap called the Cassini division, which has less ice than some of the other rings and so appears dark in contrast. Cassini separates the wide B ring from the narrow A ring. There's a ring on the outside. Saturn orbits the Sun every 29.5 years. So let's go in. The orbital time goes greater than if you're four times further away from the Sun, your orbit is 4 times the square root of 2. So you take 8 times as long. If you are 9 times further away from the Sun, your orbit takes 9 times 3 is 27 times as long. So that's the Kepler's law. Which, if only you could say it that way. The teaching of it just is bizarre. Okay. And it's tilted on 27 degrees, much like Earth. This causes the rings to change orientation over time. Sometimes we see the north face, other times we see the south. And for a brief time, every 13 to 14 years, the rings are edgewise and almost disappear from view. Disappear? Yes. The rings extend for 29,000 kilometers. So in terms of millimeters, in the tiny, tiny universe scale, that's a third of a millimeter. So sort of like that's nothing end to end. So the planet will comfortably fit between Earth and the Moon, which is 96,000 kilometers to spare. So it's as a thing that gives you an idea. So the 3 by 10 to the 8. I don't know whether that's correct. Between the Earth and the Moon. The Moon is 1 light second away. It's 3 by 10 to the 8. It's 300. I think this is wrong. I think that is wrong. Yeah, he's got it wrong, obviously. Okay, so he's saying the rings extend 290,000 kilometers. The Earth Sun distance, so the Earth Moon distance is around 400,000 kilometers, roughly. About that. 400,000, 300,000 kilometers second is a light speed. And so this, he's got it wrong. Okay. They're also only wrong thing, only about 10 meters thick if you don't count warps and ripples. So they're really thin. How thin is that? A sheet of paper has a thickness ratio of 0.006. To scale rings, they're 10,000 times thicker. So another way of saying it, that you could have a 10,000 page book, like, and it would be as thick as a single sheet. You'd still open it. If all that dirty ice may once have belonged to small moons that collided in a relatively recent past, their fragments spreading out to form thin rings, or an icy comet that may have struck the orbiting moon and blasted it to pieces, the origin of the rings remains a mystery, but their beauty can be enjoyed by anyone with a small telescope. Dig out yours from the attic, then use one with the free apps of the home planetarium programs listed on page 10 to find out when and where Saturn will shine in your sky. Can I say Skyview? Yes, Skyview Light is just a revelation. And what also interests me is that when you've got dopey, angry kids, they look at it and they just cast it aside. And it's amazing how much science involves positive putting in. So I would do that too. You just get Skyview Light and it's fantastic. Careful though, once you look at a planet, you'll change your life forever. So do not go gently into that experience. You might get bitten by an astronomy bug and soon find it hard to get to bed a decent hour on clear nights. I speak from experience, and for me, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But depends. And I just think of people. Yeah. Oops. Sorry about this. Yeah, it's recording. Let's go move along here. So hopefully everything's okay. Sorry for that, this delay. I've just got to scoot around and see if people are back. No. Okay. How to find Saturn. The diagram shows Saturn location once a month past opposition, the closest approach to Earth, when it's conveniently placed for viewing in the evening sky. Saturn is bright and stands out from all the other stars in a half dozen constellations that will pass through between now and the late 2020s. Even easier, download the Star Chart app on your phone, point it towards the sky and let the app do the finding. When to look? Through mid-2020s, Saturn will be best visible through the evening hours from July to November. Well, gee, what can I say? Oh, there's a teapot. I really don't understand. Now, he's got 2018 to 2023 when he thinks the book will be here. But yeah, Skyview app is the best. How about a telescope? A telescope is a must for appreciating the beauty of Saturn and several of our other must-sees. If there's any astronomy club in your area, chances are that members would be more than happy to let you know when they're holding the next public observing night. If you decide that Saturn alone is the reason enough to finally invest in a telescope, I recommend an affordable 4 to 6 inch telescope on the Obsidian mount. So, I'll have to say about that. The name comes from John Dobson, who devised the mount that was simple and stable and sturdy. And he's trying to teach astronomy to the homeless people of San Francisco. And basically, it's the same slope for a military cannon. And that is, it points at an angle to the ground and rotates to the ground, much like, say, a sprinkler or anything. So it's like it's not all that scientific. However, nowadays computers can make a Dobsonian mount track stars as good as anything else. He's right. Many inexpensive telescopes come with a wobbly mounts and tripods, not the Dobsonian. That said, even junky scopes will show the rings, but why get junk? Invest a little cash and you'll be able to tour the universe in comfort and style. In the resources section, I've listed several telescope options and online shops where you can buy with confidence. Again, I think there should be a central astronomy club which gives you telescopes and you can rent them. I don't understand that for a while. Okay, we'll see how many minutes we've gone into this one. Okay, 18 minutes. I'll just do number 2 here. Things are all falling apart here. Okay, moon, planet, and planet-planet conjunction. So, conjunction is really nothing's happening special in space. But if you draw a line between the planets and through Earth, it draws a line. You can see several things. So when you're looking up, those are together. I don't understand why conjunctions are notionally interesting. But some things in life are inevitable. It will snow in Duluth, Minnesota in January. People will disagree about politics. And given time, two planets will come together in conjunction to make a pretty dam in the night sky. Is that true? I suppose almost all planets. Yeah. Well, I sort of almost doubt that. A conjunction occurs when one or more celestial objects lines up above one another. We say they have the same celestial longitude. Remember longitude? They are vertical lines in the world map. A city with the same longitude as yours is located either due north or due south of your locations. Well, that's getting pretty arbitrary. My God, Father. I would have said that at the same point, but they've got the same celestial longitude. That's pretty easy. For instance, St. Louis' longitude is nearly identical to Jackson, Mississippi, although the two cities are almost 500 miles apart. You could say they are in permanent conjunction. In contrast, celestial alignments only last a day or two. So I think it's more the fact that the planets are near to each other. Planets never get stuck in the same place in the sky because they're always on the move, orbiting the Sun. They also travel at different speeds depending on the distance from it. Mercury is closest to the Sun and completes one lap every 88 days, and it's highly elliptical. Venus every 225 days and Jupiter every 12 years. Saturn 26.7, remember, or 26.5. Further, each planet orbits is tipped somewhat with respect to Earth's Mercury inclination is... Mercury inclination is the greatest of the eight planets at 7 degrees, stuck about 14 full moons. Oh, yeah. So a full moon is half a degree. That's a good thing. The most are closer to 2 to 3 degrees. The big picture, these variations are slight. All the planets travel within a narrow band through the 12 constellations of the zodiac. We always find them there and nowhere else. Never in Orion, never in the Big Dipper, never in the Southern Cross. Their restricted movement stems from the very origin of the solar system. The Sun and its planets originate in a large cloud of dust of hydrogen, dubbed the Solar Nebula. I love the way this is, but good English. Gravitational collapse of the cloudlet 4.6 billion years ago led to a hot concentrated core that became the Sun. The remainder of the mass spun out into the disk that coalesced in the familiar patterns and asteroids and comets. I don't like the spun out. That's a wrong thing. If you start with a glass cloud with just a little bit of spin, something fascinating happens as it becomes compressed by self-gravity. It spins faster and faster. Physicists call this the conservation of angular momentum. I think this is complete, absolute rubbish. But this is conservation of angular momentum. And it's not that the... things collapsing spin faster, but they conserve the angular momentum by it spins faster, but it then kicks something further out which spins more slowly. So the angular momentum, you can't gain angular momentum, you can just transfer angular momentum. So the inner part has spun faster, the outer part spinning slowly. That's just the physicist speaking. You can see the principle at work during the ice skating competition where skaters go into spin. She pulls her arms and legs, becoming more compact, as it were, and starts spinning so fast it makes you dizzy just to watch it. This is a very simple same process which happens in the solar nebula. The energy of the spinning flattened out the cloud to pancake like disk with a platform. That's incorrect. So essentially things falling out of the plane had a momentum exchange. So if they had momentum exchange out of the cloud, they would tend to bump things a long way from the central disk, and then you get a build up in the central disk. The relic remains with us today because the Earth also resides in the same plane as the other planets. When we gaze into the sky, planets cycle around the sky in the same narrow belt. Coming and going, they appear as one another as close as awe inspiring conjunctions. Yes, but also there is this glow in the night sky, which is the whole planetary disk, it's called a zodiac glow. So the zodiac glows because of just fine dust and particles in it. Moon-planet conjunctions are fairly common because the moon is close to Earth and moves across the sky much faster than the distant planets. Over the course of a month, the moon drives by all eight planets, spending a night with each. Some of the most striking conjunctions occur when the lunar crescent passes near the brightest planets, Venus and Jupiter. The sight of two brilliant celestial objects in the sky side by side can get the attention of even those who don't routinely watch the night sky. Let's see if this is my friend coming back. Flat planet conjunctions are uncommon and happen over several nights because the planets are much further away and appear to move much more slowly across the sky. Well, they do. They gradually grow closer until one night of conjunction, then they're the closest and the most pleasing to the eye. And I think that's what we call conjunction, that's planets coming together, they're not longitudinal conjunction. No planets stand still. As they come together, they part. For more distant planets, they take longer to orbit around the Sun. They don't meet up again for years. Mercury and Venus, being much closer to Earth, zoom back and forth from morning to evening, often crossing paths with each other or with other more remote planets. Not surprisingly, the most visually compelling conjunctions involve the brightest planets of Venus and Jupiter, or one of these paired with Mars, or when the planet is close to Earth and brilliant. Now, that is true, that the Mars is dull, and, you know, it can be, you know, much further away or much closer. Mars really brightens and dims. Conjunctions are the sky's magic tricks. Two planets are distanced from one another, as Venus and Neptune can briefly look as close neighbours. And when they happen to fall within the same line of sight, even though they're more than 2.5 billion miles apart. All right, see you.
Okay, I'll see.
All right. Okay, I'll just finish this up pretty quickly. Not only are planets appearing wonderful to look at, they can use them to help us identify planets invisible to naked eye, such as Uranus and Neptune, both of which require binoculars. While Uranus can be glimpsed with the naked eye from a dark sky, having Jupiter and Mars lined up nearby with a conjunction makes finding it no trouble at all. Otherwise, you'll need a fair detailed map and knowledge of the zodiac constellations to spot them. Very rarely, planets cross together and overlap with an occult. I've listed several below. There are very few far between. So pass the news to your kids and tell them to pass it to their kids. Okay. So, you may hear or read online that planetary alignments are responsible for everything from plagues to earthquakes. Don't believe it for a minute. While additional gravitational attraction of Earth when two or more planets line up, it's inevitable because they're so far away. Venus briefly comes closer to the Earth at 27 miles, and when it swings between the Earth and the Sun, that's 113 times further than the Moon. The tides caused by the combined dugs of the Sun and Moon are much stronger than Venus' minute contribution, and there's no correlation during those approaches to earthquakes and natural disaster. See how to see two planets line up. There are lots of ways to find out when two planets are in conjunction. The Old Farmer's Almanac, published in 1792, still lists all the planetary conjunctions in its monthly calendar section. You can download a free star program such as Stellarium to thumb through the sky days, weeks and months ahead to see for yourself when the planets approach and recede each other. Or you can use a table on the next page prepared to 2223, listing the best and brightest conjunctions. If you're looking for a bright, faint planet pairings, please turn to the Uranus-Neptune entry on page 139. Moon-planet conjunctions. This sample of 2018 will get you started. For a more complete listing, check the resources. And there's different conjunctions. I'm not going to read it to you. Okay, then the next one is a three-planet conjunction, which I surely can't write about for too long. Okay, well, I have to finish now and go in and see how everyone is faring. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.